Firstly, first, Declan, how are you?
Very well, very well. We have been on a quite a mammoth series of tour dates from the UK, supporting the ratings, then in our own headline show. Then I was doing some in-stores, and then we've been in Europe for about 4 weeks-ish, maybe three and a half, but it finishes in Saturday. And it's been really good. It's been an amazing experience. It's been great to come and play sold out shows to places we've never been before. It's been great to get a foot in the door of places that we've never thought about playing and see kind of whether there's an audience there. And thankfully the answer has been vast majority yes. But yeah, like we've had a really good time. It's felt like something's going up a level. Do you know what I mean?
That's very good to hear. How's the body feeling? How's the mind feeling after such a busy
Yeah,
year?
I guess body is feeling like I'm looking forward to sleeping in my own bed very soon. We've been okay. I think that it's just a lot of drinking, a lot of eating quite badly, a lot of not really sleeping very much. And then obviously, like if you've ever seen our show, it's quite a physically demanding show. Like I throw myself about the stage, and so yeah, I think that I've probably realized that 4 weeks is about the limit of when I need a little bit of a break. So I'm glad that one's coming, but it's been really good. Mentally, it is tough, but it's also great. It's kind of you get thrown from
Sure.
one to the other. Do you know what I mean? You come off stage and you get people in parts of the world that you've never been before saying that they've been waiting to see you for 4 years, and that you're one of their favorite bands, and the gig was amazing and all that. And then you just immediately then driving in a van in a bed for like 11 hours far from home and not put out your own routine. So it's very high highs, low lows. I think that's probably how I'd describe tourism. And you need to try and manage it so that you don't feel either of them, that you stay somewhere in the middle, the majority of it.
That sounds smart. When you got into music, did you have any expectations of what it would entail to be in a touring band?
None whatsoever, mate. None whatsoever. I really just knew that I wanted to express myself in some way. And guitar seemed like a good outlet for that, and it seemed like if I kept going at it, I would get better. So I did that. Then a few important writers that I'd sort of were recommended to me by friends kind of changed the way that I thought about lyricism and lyrics, and that meant that I tried my hand at really putting effort into the words of songs, and then it kind of went well. Or at least it was received well locally. And then from there, I kind of had a base of going, well, I think I'm good at lyrics. Let's see how good I can get at the other things. And I had no expectation whatsoever that I would be. Sorry, I'm in the middle of an interview with this. No worries at all. It's okay. Graham will be able to give you, I think, the info you need. Sorry,
No worries.
our lovely driver, Matthias, was asking for the Wi-Fi password. That Graham has, but I don't. Anyway. But to answer your question, I don't think I had any expectation whatsoever. I think I thought, let's just play some music and see how it turns out. And it's already exceeded. We've managed to play all over the world, record an album in LA and go on European tours. And your end of year data tells you that people are listening to you. I think our biggest growing fan base, like the five countries we grew the most in, were all in Africa this year, which was cool. It's a
Okay.
part that I'm choking to go to and would love to see more of. So yeah, like places like I think Kenya and Egypt and stuff came up on it, and I was like, I'd love to go to these places. So yeah, I think you kind of just accept that wherever it takes you, it's going to take you. I'm not writing anything off, but I have no demands or expectations. I think I just want to keep making music that I like.
Fair enough. Now, I find it interesting what you mentioned about kind of falling into lyric writing and lyricism. And what kind of literature did you find? Were it poets? Were it kind of classic literature? But how did you got put onto words and building sentences and all
I
that, telling
always, I was
stories?
always a fairly decent communicator, both orally and written. Like I kind of knew that I was able to put words in ways that were either interesting or funny or convincing or whatever it is, like for whatever I needed to do at school. So I always liked writing. And then I joined a band young and was the kind of singer and lyricist. And I guess probably the first major influence would be somebody like Zach de la Rocha from Rage Against the
Okay.
Machine, or Rocca, I think it might be. I'm not sure if it's Rocha or Rocca, but Zach, the singer from Rage Against the Machine, is like one of the best, I think, like really direct, emotional kind of storytellers. And it's also this thing of like, and I think it was years later that I realized this was what I was doing, but that you let the words suit the music and the music suit the words. So that there's a relationship between the two ways in music that you can kind of elicit emotion through words and through melody, music, drum beats, whatever you want to call it. In terms of writers, I guess the first book that I really loved, like really, really, really loved, and like thought, I love this as much as I love another form of media, like a song or an album or a TV show, was Catcher in the Rye,
Okay.
which is a very, like, very stereotypical answer for a young boy of like sort of 13, 14. But I remember just being like amazed that a book could be funny, like an adult book could be funny when I was like 12, 13. I was like, oh, this is actually like quite interesting and funny, and I want to continue to read this. And then people like Kurt Vonnegut, poets like John Cooper Clarke, Kay Tempest, poets that maybe speak a bit more in a voice that is more immediately understandable as a human being speaking, as opposed to maybe some of the more classical poets who sound kind of ethereal. And that's really cool in its own way, like, but I also think that I like to, especially at the start of your journey, it's really good to see someone speak in a voice that you recognize.
Sure.
Like Scottish person, a band like the Proclaimers, as much as everyone knows their kind of one big song abroad, they're an incredible band that have got like a loads of albums of like fantastic work. And one of the most important parts of them is that it lets you see that the Scottish language is not something to be kind of ashamed of and to cover up and to hide. And I'm sure that's even more true if you get into people who don't speak English in English speaking countries, like the, Irish Gaelic population. Or if you think about things that are like languages that kind of grow out of someone or a group of people being forced to speak English that wouldn't have naturally, so like Jamaican patois and stuff like that. I think music's this amazing vehicle for language to express itself in less formal ways. So reading, listening to people like the Proclaimers, and then reading people like God, hold on, I've forgotten the name of this person, and I absolutely have to
No worries. I know the feeling.
so there's a Scottish poet, and I had to get the name of the poem, but it's the poet's called Tom Leonard, and he writes in like phonetic Scots. So like the one of his most famous poems, called The 6 O'Clock News, it's "This is the 6 o'clock news, the man said, and the reason to a talk with a BBC accent is," and it's all written in like actual phonetic
Right,
English.
right, right, right.
That would be the wrong way around, but essentially the lyricism came from first feeling something from other people using lyrics, feeling something from people like Alex Turner from the Arctic Monkeys, Billy Bragg, Jarvis Cocker, and then going, right, well, how is it that I can try and do this? And then realizing that to more or less of an extent, a lot of the people, Courtney Barnett would be another person that was massive when I was starting to write music. More or less, these are people who write like they speak, and that why don't I try writing like I speak and see where it goes? And I wrote better songs than I'd done before, so I just carried on with it. And now, if anything, I'm kind of almost not going the other direction, but examining that and trying to play around with that and trying to maybe leave more space and be more ambiguous. So yeah, I think language is fascinating. Mate, I could talk about it for ages. I think as well, like the idea of humanizing through language, people that are dehumanized through language. So even people like Lou Reed and the Pogues
Sure.
would be people that I think are really good at taking the kind of people in society that you're not meant to sympathize with, and creating stories that you want to sympathize with. And I think that's a really a good exercise in empathy. But that's not unique to any one writer or genre. I think that's true of so many genres. A lot of Motown, a lot of R&B, a lot of country music, a lot of singer-songwriter music is kind of about telling the story of someone who maybe you wouldn't have thought of finding out the story yourself. So yeah, I think lyricism in music is this kind of complete. Yeah, there's infinite possibilities. You know, it's just
Sure.
as valid to write a short story in a song as it is to make up your own language. You know, like Cocteau Twins, a Glaswegian band that are just fucking amazing. And the whole point of it is that it isn't about the words that they're saying, it's about the sound that their voice is making with the music.
Sure. Well, that's interesting because you mentioned earlier that you were trying to match or synergize the words with the music that the band is playing. And now on the second album, then, how do you see the development from the first album to the second with that as the music starts to expand? Does your lyricism change alongside
Yeah,
with it?
it does actually. Yeah, because well, so I wrote the whole of the second album in a on my Mac in lockdown, and for the first time, unable to like kind of develop the songs with the band. Because usually, what would happen is I would come in with like a you know chords and a melody, a song, and then we would fill it out. And so for the first time, I was like, "Well, I have to do this myself." And so the vast majority of, in terms of hours spent, it's probably like 80% of the hours are spent in the music in this versus 20% on the lyrics. And I think it was because I wanted to try and build up a really definite idea of the kind of emotion. I started teaching as well during this. I started teaching songwriting, and it forced me to try and kind of deconstruct elements of it. And what I realized was that a song really exists to do one thing: to make you feel something, to make you feel an emotion. What that emotion is it can vary, and what that emotion is not, doesn't need to be fixed. And you know, but really, what a song is, if a song makes you feel an emotion, that has been successful. And so I was like, well, I kind of want to see what I feel just from the music, and then try and write in that way. And obviously, how you feel just generally and what's going on in your life is going to bleed through, but I tried very hard to respond to the like musical question, if you will, in every song, of to be like, what is it that this is to me, and how can I then enhance this and make this emotion even more pronounced or more hidden or more, whatever the point is, your words and your songs, your music having a relationship. And so sometimes it's that it leans really in to the feeling. Sometimes it's that it isn't. So we've got a song called First to Know, where all the verses are all, they sound like this really dead, chilled out, laid back kind of, you know, very like, if you put different words to it, it would sound like a very chilled out, happy summer anthem. But the
Sure.
words are devastating in that song. The words are about, and deliberately so. And I thought it was interesting to try and play around with the fact that you don't really wake up one day and go, I'm depressed. It's not like a sudden thing. You start not going out, and then you start not returning people's calls, and then you start eating badly, and then you start not really exercising, and then you start doing, and if all of it feels normal, all of it just feels like I'm bored, I'm lazy, I'm whatever, I'm tired, I'm not. But then out of nowhere, you kind of get this feeling of like, oh Christ, I've cut myself off from the world here, and I feel terrible, and I don't really know what to do to get out of it. So that song was kind of meant to be a reflection of that wee journey where you kind of are just plodding along as if everything's great and happy, and I'm just taking it easy, nothing's wrong, and then bang, you realize what's going on. And then in other songs, it was, what does this sound like to me I'm going to try and write something that reflects it as well as I can, leaning into the sound of the music.
And I find it interesting the juxtaposition. I don't know if that's the right word to use, but the juxtaposition between a song like First Snow, which is more, I would say, introspective perhaps, and more, they're dealing with
Absolutely.
depression, as you mentioned, and then a song, one of my favorites, 100 to 1, which is this very narrative style writing. I'm a big Bob Dylan fan, and I like those kind of storytelling songs as
Yeah,
well. So
me
how does a
too.
song, how does a narrative style song like that come together? Is it just from going out all these years and seeing these people around?
I guess so. It's interesting that song. So that song, once again, the music came first, and I was like, what is it that I can do with a song that I really love? I love because the melody was also sort of there, and I liked how weird it was, and it was just like a bit pop and then a bit indie and a bit the streets and a bit something else. And then I kind of had another whole different version of it written lyrically, very similar melodically, but lyrically. And when we got over, or I think maybe in the few weeks before us thinking about going over to record with Luca, the producer, I think I changed the chorus to what the chorus is now. The hey, all right, it's time Saturday night. And I was like, right, okay, there's two ways to go from here. You lean into that and you make this just like an anthem about how great nights out are and drinking is, and that's probably just too easy and too straightforward for my annoying brain. And so I was like, right, well, what could you do to make that chorus feel kind of like you've got whiplash, like the car stopped quickly, and what the fuck, what's going on here? So you kind of have this idea of it starting like a, and it's also got a wee bit of like a lullaby feel to it,
Sure.
and it starts off very gentle, then it's kind of funny, and then the first chorus, I think what's really interesting in music, and you can do this with words, you can do it with melodies, you can do it with rhythm, is that you can do the exact same thing, and if you change everything around it, it feels completely different. And so when you take a chorus as kind of very unambiguous, or at least very straightforward, as hey, all right, it's time Saturday night, da 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 da. First verse sets it up to kind of be a bit funny. Hey, Saturday night. And then every verse after that, kind of, it feels very strange, and or at least the attempt is for it to feel almost like ironic, or almost like that there's like the audience knows something that the character doesn't. So the audience is aware that to drink and dance and do all the other things that you're meant to do is this kind of increasingly problematic solution to this character's
Sure.
problem. But then the story just kind of came from writing. I try and auto write. I try and just sit down and write and then edit, because I think you can kind of, when you're on a roll, you can get something that feels a bit more urgent and maybe a bit more honest if you kind of just get it all out in one, for me anyway. So I was pleased with how that came together lyrically, very pleased. And I think it, my one worry for it was it would turn into like an anti-drinking PSA. And
Well,
I'm glad that I don't think it came across as that, because it was meant to be this kind of social commentary on what are we doing really? Why is it that from Scotland, in Scotland anyway, why is it that so many, particularly men between the ages of about 16 and about 60, not only choose to just forget their weekends, but are like so unbelievably excited by it that nothing else matters, and enjoy it in this kind of manic way, this kind of way that's like kind of chaotic. If you're on board, it feels really normal. You take a step out, you don't drink for the night, you stop drinking, you go home early, you realize that there is a kind of let's drive the Titanic full force at the iceberg
sure.
kind of feeling to drinking in Scotland anyway. And it may be true all over the world, but I can't really comment on how true or not it is. Travel in Europe, it does seem like people have a moderately more sensible approach to drinking on the continent than we do in Britain. But I'm sure it's true all over the shop that there is this kind of, I'm going to drink as much as my body will take, and almost I'm excited to ignore the consequences of that. So I kind of just wanted to talk about that. That was pretty much it.
No, but it's interesting that you mentioned that, because when I listened to the song and went through the lyrics, what it reminded me of, there was this book I read by a Scottish guy, I think. What's his name then? Darren McGarvey, Poverty Safari, which was kind of about glass and poverty in Glasgow.
I know that. I know that. I know that. I've read the book. It's a fantastic book. He's a
And I
super.
found that very interesting, but it goes into what you are saying, kind of this almost culture of poverty, or this culture of destructive behavior in a way. It's very interesting, and then that's what it kind of reminded me of.
Absolutely. I think like anyone in Scotland will be able to tell you a version of that story. And I think it's because it's probably for a thousand different reasons, right? And there's no one reason that I can give you. But I definitely think part of it is that when you go to these kind of post-industrial communities in Scotland, places that used to have like a purpose, the whole like up to the point where there's genuinely places like Ravenscraig and various different places in Scotland where it's communities built around like a mine or around a
Sure.
factory, around a thing. And you have people whose lives had a twofold purpose that isn't necessarily there anymore, which is religion and work. People used to go to church on a Sunday and believe that if they were a good person, God would reward them. People used to know that if they went into work on a Monday and they worked hard, they'd be able to pay their bills, they'd be able to get their kids' clothes, they'd be able to afford their house. And as much as that is not a perfect system, I'm not saying that the 60s and 70s in Scotland or the 50s and 60s in Scotland is a perfect system by any stretch of the imagination. But there are certain elements of stability and of
Sure.
reliability that have been removed completely. And I think that do you ever stay out, do you ever plan to go home at 10, having work the next day, and you end up out at 12, so you stay out till 3? Because you're like, ah, well, I've already done the damage. I may as well
I
get
might
a
as well,
little.
yeah, get every minute out of it that I possibly can, yeah.
Exactly. I'm going to feel bad tomorrow anyway. Why not feel bad and kind of make my own way? I think there's like a tiny element of that that's kind of analogous to the idea of, well, Monday to Friday isn't really mine. Sunday, I kind of need to be out. So there's going to be this Saturday, this space in the night where I can truly do what I like. And for some people, that's sitting in and watching the telly. For some people, that's going to the pub and getting blittered. And for some people, it's whatever. But yeah, I
No,
think
I was
part
go.
of it. Yeah.
So no, I was gonna say I don't drink or barely drink anymore for the past 10 years after since I've been out of college. But you mentioned watching TV. There are these evenings where I'm watching TV and I'm thinking to myself, well, I should go to bed right now. And then for some reason, 2 hours later, you're still watching random stuff and you think, okay, so tomorrow's wasted now, and all of this. It's weird how how your
And
mind
even the
plays tricks
idea
on
of
you.
like anything that you enjoy that doesn't make money for someone else is time wasted. Do you know what I mean? Like if you enjoy your work can be productive or make money for you even. But see, just sitting and watching telly, like there's few greater pleasures in life, man. Like I really I'm
Sure.
such like an advocate for zoning out and just enjoying yourself. And I do think that that is very much what things like if I'm sitting and watching The Simpsons or if I'm sitting watching Arrested Development or watching some 4.5 hour YouTube video essay on some really niche pointless topic, there is an element of like I now try and frame the fact that I know this isn't necessarily productive as like a good thing. It's like I've been productive, I've done my productive shit. This is me deliberately not being productive. So yeah, it's kind of just about agency, isn't it? It's about taking control of your own life. And alcohol and drugs in general can make you feel like you've got even the ones that don't do it. I mean, I'm an ex-smoker, just about, but a year and a half, give or take the odd puff of a cigarette that then I immediately put down and go, this tastes like crap now. But I remember the feeling of being stressed and of just smoking a cigarette and just taking 5 minutes to go, the world's on fire. But what I'm doing right now, I'm taking this, I'm smoking this, and then after this, I'll deal with it. There is like an element of these substances and the effect, the decision to use them almost as being this kind of like reclaiming of agency. But maybe that's
Sure.
just fucking a philosophy degree misapplied. to
No,
the
but
unrelated topic.
I do think there's some truth to it, because when there's very little agency that you have in the world, then those little things become vastly more important. But this ties
Massively.
into my final question then is quite well, I think, because in the song "Come Outside," you talk about some of these things. I think, and one of the questions I usually ask people is what their definition of success is. And we're talking about time wasted, wasted time. And you mentioned the definition of success in this song. So how do you see success, and especially in what the band is doing now? As you mentioned in the beginning of this interview, the band is going on an upward trajectory. So how do you kind of see success now?
So there's my answer philosophically and my answer professionally. My answer philosophically is happiness. And that is barely an answer. That's just another question. I totally understand that. For me, that would be you feeling like you are trying in some way to improve the world and whatever way you are best equipped to do so. And that you have people around you who love you and that you love them, right? That would be probably my definition of happiness-ish. You feel like you're making a bit of a difference in a positive way, and the people around you love you and you love them. Professionally, quitting other jobs. That's everyone. If you ask any band, and I'm sure you have, I'm sure this is the most common answer given. There is a relentless ambition that is helpful to have to say, I want to play in the moon. I want to do 25 nights in Madison Square Garden. I want to do this. I want to do that. Right. That is probably not a bad thing if you don't suffer the kind of mirror image of comparing yourself to people who are more successful and it killing you. I think if you can just be that ambitious, aim for whatever it is that you do. My own personal success, either financially or in terms of like the size of the band, hasn't ever really been as big a concern for me as opposed to do I love what we are doing? I want to continue to make, I basically want to make as much music as it's possible to make so that when whatever happens at the end of my life, I can go, do you know what? There's no avenue you didn't get to go. You wanted to make this, so you made it. You wanted to make that, so you made it. I want to write a book. I want to try and make some TV. I want to try and act and stuff. I want to try everything possible. So professionally, whatever would allow me to do that would be success in my eyes. And I think probably the easiest way for you to be allowed to do that is that all of your income comes from one primary job that doesn't, whereas right now I am spread so thin over so many different things. So success professionally to us, I think, would mean being able to tour with enough regularity and the venue's been enough size that we go on one tour a year and it pays everybody's wages. That'd be fucking great. We all like touring. We all like touring the places that, like, we are now adding cities. We've toured the UK enough that we now have a broad enough sample size to go, right, here is where we're going to go for the next year or 2 years. This is where we can grow. Then when they grow, we'll maybe go back to the other places that aren't really showing us as much potential. This tour in Europe has been brilliant because we've added like six or seven cities onto that list of being like, well, here is the priority areas. Like we sold, I think the first gig to sell out was Prague, so Budapest out, so Vienna, Paris, four dates in Germany, I think. At least two of which are sellouts, the other two very close. Copenhagen, we've added cities there, so there's a path there. But I guess there's an element of this as well that there's always, I think that you want to make art that has an impact on people, and you want to feel that it's more than just a throwaway listen. I heard your tune on TikTok, and so I decided to come because I know the chorus. Like, I would much rather have a smaller audience that really cared than a bigger audience that kind of sort of knew you, that would go away for a bit, because we hope that we've given people who like us enough of an indication from album one to album two that like we're going to try stuff. We're going to try and see where it leads us. We wouldn't want to be pigeonholed into we're going to do no fun. again and again and again and again. As much as I love that tune, I just don't want to make the same thing twice.
Sure.
And we've already done that. We've done it. I think we've done the first album thing pretty well, and I'm pretty happy with it. And there's not a lot I'd go back and change. So, as we keep playing live, what's interesting is that the playing live makes you want to write faster songs. I think the reason that the album is slower is because the environment it was created in meant that you wanted to sit with music and listen, and on second listen and third listen, kind of go, oh, I've discovered new things about this. So I ended up going back to people like, I think, Frank Ocean, Kendrick Lamar, Fontaines DC, a lot of bands that, while absolutely they have their kind of rowdier, louder stuff, are people who you can listen to again and again and again and again and again and again and find new stuff. Whereas now we're out playing live, we've already written a song kind of on the road, and we've played it live a couple of times, and it's like very quick and very like immediately people are responding, and you go, oh, that's the feeling that you actually really want to chase in a live room. You want to have people be energized. So I think the next thing will be faster. What version of fast that is, I don't know, but I think it will be faster.
We're gonna wait and see how it turns out. And then I believe tomorrow in Amsterdam is also sold out, which is I'm glad that us Dutch people also have embraced the band as well.
You've been making mixed decisions lately, so I'm glad that you decided.
Oh yeah. No, unfortunately, I was gonna do this interview in person, but I can't be there this weekend. So I'm very sorry about that. But
That's all
thank you
right.
so
That's
much
all
for
right.
taking the time to sit down and talk with me.
No worries at all, mate. Pleasure chatting to you. Take care of yourself. Have a good weekend.
You too, man. Have a good one.